Spotlight. Good evening, listeners, and welcome to today's Spotlight. I'm Gaura Dhawan Lal, and today we'll be talking about the Bharat Climate Forum 2026.
We have a very special guest with us. We have with us today Mr. Mukul Sanwal, environmentalist. Mukul, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Mukul, before we begin, an introduction by the Vice President, Shri C.P. Radhakrishna, on actually India's relationship with the environment, on how Indians traditionally over the centuries have seen how deeply embedded we are with nature, and the nurturing of nature is critical for any kind of equity and growth. Let's listen to him.
When we gather to discuss climate and development, it is important to remember that India's engagement with these questions is neither recent nor reactive. Long before sustainability became a contemporary concern, Indian thought stressed on harmony between human activity and the natural world. In simple and enduring terms, it is said in my mother tongue Tamil, Iyarkaiyodu isaindhu valarchi, that is Iyarkaiyodu isaindhu vaal. That means development that grows in harmony with the nature. We have to live with the nature. That is our ancestors' words, which I want to remind, that we have to protect the environment.
So, Mukul, you've been actually tracking and have been an active voice in helping us understand, helping policy understand how important it is to grow in sync with the environment, not at the cost of environment. Last 15 to 20 years, have we really made progress? Because for us, we are such a huge population, people have always dominated. But now, are we understanding the importance?
You see, Gaurav, the Vice President emphasized that we are a civilizational power. And environment and nature, prosperity, well-being has been intertwined in such a manner with our culture and ethos that we don't even notice that our per capita carbon emissions is half the global average and we are the fourth largest economy. Now, this is not a result merely of government policy, but also of the way we look at ourselves, our lifestyle, and how we see the balance between nature and the importance of nature in our lives, exemplified by the monsoon. The monsoon is unique to India, and the monsoon is responsible for India's prosperity. So our link, not just with environment, but also with the atmosphere. After all, the monsoon is part of the trade winds and atmospheric changes. So the important point that I think the Vice President also made and the Prime Minister has made continuously is that it is ingrained in us in a manner that we don't have to be told about it. Yes, the certain development trends take place. We need to be reminded that these are against that ethos, that trend of who we are, and we take corrections. Take the case of the electric vehicles in Delhi. The number of electrical vehicles is growing, not because of government compulsion, but because people find it more economical, convenient, if they have to travel within the city.
Right.
Yes, they don't have a long range. So this is an example of how we are adapting to climate change and how we are taking new technology into our lives without any coercion.
In fact, India has an ambitious target to achieve net zero emissions by 2070, to meet 50% of its energy needs from non-fossil sources by 2030, and of course, achieve 30% EV sales penetration for new vehicles by 2030. Now, before I request you to come into the targets and where we are with respect to them, Mr. Manohar Lal Khattar, the Minister of Power, has spoken about this.
Duniya ke andar, aaj agar kahen, to we are leader in solar energy. Aur uska jitne bhi hamari fossil non-fossils ki power hai, achievement in clean energy, remarkable hai. To us naate se main keh sakta hoon ki while we are proud of all overall achievement in power sector, at the same time, India has rapidly transitioned towards clean energy. Non-fossil fuel sources now account for over 51.5% of our total installed capacity. और इसमें रिमार्केबल बात यह है कि हमारा जो टारगेट था ये 2030 का था कि वी विल क्रॉस 50% ऑफ आवर आरई, बट वी हैव अचीव्ड इट 5 इयर्स अर्लियर देन दैट इन 2025 हमने सर्च के लिए अचीव किया है. दिस इज अवर स्पीड ऑफ डूइंग द वर्क, दिस इज अवर कमिटमेंट टू द सिस्टम. तो हमने उसको 5 वर्ष पहले ही पूरा कर लिया है.
So Mukul, your view and your take on our targets, and are we going to set new benchmarks or are we going to look at sustainability of what we have achieved? Because actually, it has to be seen over a period of time.
You see, the target is clear. By 2070, we will achieve net zero. the Prime Minister has deliberately not acceded to the global view pushed by the developed countries that we should achieve this target by 2050. That's my first point. My second point is that the insight the Prime Minister had, not now, even earlier, that India has such a large number of solar energy days where you can utilize solar energy. For example, in Germany, one third of the year alone you have sunlight. In India, except a few days in the monsoons and cloudy days in the winter rains, you have abundant sunshine. And you have abundant barren land, Rajasthan, Gujarat, Telangana areas in the south, where there is no irrigation and which are not fit for agriculture in the sense that we understand agriculture productivity. So the potential is huge. Now, he has emphasized this point at a time when the rest of the world was not emphasizing this point because this was not a priority in other countries. Yes, China is also moving forward in this, but we have more potential than China. So we are going to take some time over it. But the foundation has been laid by the manufacturing policies of the government, encouraging Indians, Indian industry, to go in for solar energy panels, chips, and the other paraphernalia like the improvement of the grid that goes with it. We have more potential in solar than wind. Now, Britain, Germany, Netherlands, Norway, they have more potential for wind, almost zero. Very limited potential for solar. So again, India is striking out in a different path than to the others, some kind of leadership role, which will be the leadership role will affect Africa, because Africa is where climate emission control is most needed, because 40% of future growth is going to come from the African continent. And India is steadily becoming a model for Africa, relying on solar energy. Now, when I say that the foundation has been laid, it is not just in terms of generation of solar energy, but we are also looking at hydrogen energy, which can be a form of storage. We don't want to have storage in terms of large batteries, because that is not indigenous to us. We don't have that tradition. We don't have all the minerals that are required, but we can generate green hydrogen. We are also going in for nuclear. There has been a path-breaking nuclear legislation in this session, again piloted by the Prime Minister, who realized that unless we get into nuclear in the right manner, modular nuclear reactors, more indigenous technology, more role for local participation, it will not be sustained. Now, the point that you have made is very valid, that will it be sustained?
Right.
Yes, it will be, because the background infrastructure that is needed is being built simultaneously. The government policy is clear, and it is looking at long-term interests. And I think most important with the innovation of this government, again, is that there is a constant dialogue with industry. The feeling is it is not just the public sector that has to do it. Society as a whole and industry has to be involved.
You're absolutely right. And we also know that for any technology to be sustainable, there is the cost factor, because, you know, you have to get your scale, the numbers, and cost factor is very critical for, and there are subsidies, and I know that there is government support, I know infrastructure is being developed. What do you think are some critical things, just thinking a little ahead of the curve, that we will really need to implant this in people's head to say there should be no debate about, you know, is it growth versus environment? Can we seed this now and make it economically feasible also for the common person?
I think the growth versus environment debate really applies to the West. When the issue of environment became a global issue in 1972 in the Stockholm Conference, the West had already urbanized. And the entire issue of climate change took place between 1950 and 1970 with the rapid urbanization of the West. Not only steel, cement, but also the automobiles.
Right.
Particularly in the United States. Now, we don't know that billion people in this world, particularly in Africa, use as much energy in a year as the average refrigerator uses in a single day, which means they are not basically connected to the grid at all. Now, what we have done is, I think, as an innovation, again, the insight of the Prime Minister that, look, this is not just a question of technology transfer, which had been the discussion and the debate in the climate negotiations right from 1992. He has said that unless we develop our own R&D, our own indigenous technologies, it will not be sustainable. We will not be able to improve. We will not be able to gain efficiency benefits unless we develop our own and put a substantial amount into R&D. There is a separate fund for this, to look into this, the kind of R&D that we are talking about here, renewable energies, hydrogen, and new minerals, materials for battery technology. Now, that is again new. We never did this in the past. The entire focus was technology transfer will come from abroad. At best, we will subsidize it a little bit into facilitates its integration into our systems, our manufacturing, but not to develop our own. This really means that we are involving the private sector in a manner that they have never been involved earlier, and in a manner the West and the Chinese have been involving the private sector to keep growing and become global leaders. There is no doubt in my mind that the scale that India, the need that India has, if you give all those orders to local companies, they will get the money to do the R&D. But if you are importing finished products from abroad, asking them to install those products, which had been the policy before the Prime Minister changed this in a drastic manner, then where is the fund for the R&D? Where is the R&D at all? And now we find that the number of patents on emerging technologies is also increasing from India. So far, it was China and the USA that had dominated these patents. We are getting into that game. Our IITs are becoming leadership positions.
Right, right.
Again, supported by government policy.
Keeping in mind the ingenuity of the Indian mind known across the world, and we really have ways of actually, you know, whether it's our space program, we've led the way in making sure that costs are always kept in mind and the opportunity to become global leaders in providing their requirements. Maybe, you know, not even solar, but wind energy or any alternative energy source that they might be wanting to look at. You're absolutely right. We are very ingenious. Doing a little sidestep, Mukul, now to global warming. And I know there is a linguistic change. It's called climate change also. The fact is, it is worrying. And this whole debate about, so who funds global warming? You said in Africa, their actually carbon footprint is so tiny compared to the West, the so-called developed countries. So the developing and the developed countries, this debate, who funds it? Because this, the Bharat Climate Forum, it brought together policymakers, industry leaders, funders, researchers, and global allies. International cooperation is critical. How does this conflict of interest, is there one, and how does this place us?
You see, the international cooperation is vital. Let us go back centuries, thousands of years ago. When Huynh Sang came to India, I think spent 14 years in Nalanda, copied the text and went back. So this kind of interaction of knowledge and sharing of knowledge has been going along on throughout as a part of our civilizational ethos. And the Bharat Forum is also talking about knowledge exchange. They are not really focusing on technology transfer in the modern sense of patents, but knowledge exchange. Now, when you say that Global South or the developing world needs money to deal with this problem, there is another side to it also. The point that Prime Minister Modi actually raised in the United Nations in 2018, he talked of climate justice. What he really said was that, look, don't put the burden entirely on me. But he also implied, without saying so very explicitly, that let me adapt my own pathway. Don't tell me what to do. Right down to the present, the pressure had been on India to avoid using its abundant coal resources. By getting into renewable energy and the electric cars and scooters, electrification basically, what India is saying is there are many paths that countries can take to deal with this problem. Let us not describe it in the manner you describe it, because we can also eliminate the use of oil, which we don't have, and continue to use lesser amount of coal, but eliminate oil by going for electrification, by moving away from the internal combustion engine and getting into electric cars, automobiles, trucks. The entire diesel network of rails has been replaced with electric network. We don't even recognize this. And most of it will be generated by nuclear, hydro, and of course, renewable energy, solar, primarily. So we are saying, basically, and this I believe will be the model for Africa, that new demand will be met from renewable energy, and we will go for electrification.
Right.
We don't have oil. So that becomes an incentive for us to move towards electrification. So there are different ways of looking at global warming.
Very well put. You know, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I'd like to remind our listeners that you all can also listen to this program on our mobile app, News on AIR, and our YouTube channel, News On AIR official Mukul, formally saying thank you for your inputs and for your time, for really walking us through this program.
Thank you.
Spotlight.